Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to have a budget workshop here. We've got a finance meeting at 5 o'clock, so we've got plenty of time to delve into the budget. Appreciate Chairman Tripp calling this workshop for the whole council members. And Chairman, you got any words of wisdom for us?
I would just say thank you y'all for being here. We got some challenges in front of us, but I know working together we can get through it. And we're going to take this to the floor in the next couple of weeks, but if we need to hold another workshop next week, we'll do it. So committed to the process and getting you all the answers that you need.
Thank you, Chairman. Along those lines, let's review the schedule we've got laid out. The next thing on the budget would be, it'll be on the agenda for finance this evening to get it started. Then 2 weeks from today, on June the 6th, will be the next council meeting, and that'll be second reading schedule for the 24 and the 25 budgets. And then 2 weeks after that, on June the 20th, there'll be third reading on the 24 budget, and the 25 budget third reading will be in July, because we have to have the 24 budget in place by July the 1st of this year. So we're pretty fortunate this year in that we do have 2 weeks between tonight and June the 6th. We got that extra week to work with to catch up, answer any questions. As the chairman said, any more meetings or workshops you want to have, we've got looks like plenty of time to get that accomplished. I see on the agenda we've got an invocation. Normally workshops, we don't have the invocation, but we'll go ahead and have one. We'll ask the next two will like to see what the first is.
Be glad to.
That's just an outline for the discussion right there.
All right. Let us pray. Father, we praise you for this day, and we praise you for your son. And Father, we just ask that you guide us in all that we do today. Be with all the counselors here and on Zoom or wherever they may be, that we work together. We try to find solutions for our county, and be with the staff, be with the citizens, be with us all as we work together. And Father, we just praise you that we get to live in such a great place, and we ask you to guide us in all that we do. And please give us the wisdom to and the patience to work together and make this a fruitful meeting and meetings coming here in the future. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Yes, sir.
I know council members were provided a copy of the budget, and the binder's looking like this. I don't know how many of you brought your binder today, but it's a good reference point. We first heard about the budget when the administrator talked about it back in, I believe it was February, at the retreat. And then the formal presentation from the administrator and our financial staff was actually last week at the committee, the whole meeting. In the intervening time between the retreat and a presentation at the last committee poll meeting, I know that all of us have considered different aspects of the budget. We've talked to our financial team, and so we're not completely without knowledge of the budget when we reach this point here. And so we have enough information, I believe, to delve into it, ask questions, and hopefully get answers and share with us ideas. You'll find at your plate the budget workshop outline. And to facilitate the discussion, it would seem like a good idea to follow this outline, starting with the general fund. And there are five items under the general fund: revenue by source, expenditures, salaries and benefits, and operating, and additions, included in the budget, and in new positions. So I want to start from there. We'll ask the administrator if he has any opening remarks, and then we'll take questions from council members.
Mr. Chairman, members of council, I did basically want to let you know that we're just about finished working on those questions that a couple of you sent to me today that came from a constituent. So we'll have that information for you. It's pretty basic stuff that they're asking. We just have to go through and pull some information from various places, and I'll be more than happy to get that back to you.
Is your microphone on?
I think it is. I'm not, I may not be speaking in it, but it's on. Just in general, the budget itself, I think it's a very well prepared financial plan for the future for the county. Yes, it does have an adjustment to millage that we've talked about at length. We've tried to look at it a whole bunch of different angles to basically keep from having to do that. We have not been able to find a way without having major impact on current operations. I've heard a lot of discussion from county council over the last couple years about the growth and how we need to prepare ourselves for this growth. And we're playing catch up already. We've done a tremendous job over the years, not raising millage, not making adjustments there, staying just basically being creative where we could in order to keep public safety job one, keeping that funded at an appropriate level. We've been met with a number of issues over the last few years that a lot of private businesses, I believe, have dealt with also, and that's salaries for their employees. We are a large employer, and so any uptick in salaries is a huge burden that we have to overcome. We've also had to deal with the pandemic in such a way that our health insurance has been hit fairly significantly. We're hoping that that does start to trend downward as we move further away from the initial outbreak of the pandemic. However, we are going to continue having to add resources, especially to public safety. This budget does have 15 deputies the first year, 15 the second year. I think that's a good start, but we do need to keep in mind that for every year that we don't do something like that, we're just further behind. So the next year, instead of 15, maybe we have to add 30. So we're trying to position ourselves so that we don't have a huge hit in the future. Quite frankly, we had talked about this years ago, that this day was coming. However, the pandemic hit, and we were able to capture some of the federal funds that offset some of the lost revenue that we incurred. And it also allowed us to give some increases to our public safety personnel. So we've had a lot of things coming together, but this is really no surprise to any of us. Some of the newer council members, you know, obviously you were not here. So it may be somewhat of a surprise to you. However, as we looked and modeled the financial picture years ahead, it was very obvious, and we have been communicating that with council over the years. Knock on wood, we were able to hold off having to do anything until this budget. I'm very proud of that. That was a heck of an accomplishment. Thank you to county council for standing with us to accomplish what we did. It's unheard of what we've accomplished over the last 30 years, not raising prices and still do all the things that we're able to accomplish. It's tremendous. So I'm actually very excited about this plan. Like I said, I think it is very well put together, well thought out plan. And I look forward to answering any questions.
Mr. Cornell, to put it in perspective, can you tell us how much the starting pay was for a public safety employee, say a deputy, was say 5 or 6 years ago versus what it is today?
Yeah, 5 or 6 years ago it was in the low 30s, upper high 20s. It's now over 40,000, which is tremendous because we're competing against all these other public policing agencies across the state, really. In the old days, we'd compete a little bit with the surrounding areas and everything, but now we're competing with Charleston and Columbia, North Carolina, Georgia, a lot of different areas where we're finding a lot of mobility between our workforce, where they'll move between agencies for a very small amount of money. So we've had to get very competitive, and I think we have.
But Chairman?
So back in Economics 101, you know, they taught you the elasticity of demand. So what you're saying is the elasticity of employees when it comes to pay increases is not very high. They'll leave. I mean, is there anything we can do as a county to mitigate that?
We have somewhat of an advantage because of the size of our organization, and this is pretty much for all departments. Whereas there is room for movement. Once you get here, do a good job. There is room to move up through the ranks. And we have put a lot of opportunities out there for the employees in all departments, all different areas, so that there is some mobility. At the sheriff's office, you know, they do a lot of different things that a lot of law enforcement agencies do not. With all the specialized teams and equipment that we have, same way in, for instance, public safety, you know, with our DNA lab and all that, forensics, we're doing a lot of different things there with the crime tools, but it gives our employees the ability to move and not just stay at the same place. You don't see too many deputies that have been at the starting level for very long, quite frankly. You do have some that's where they like to be and all that, and we appreciate that very much. But you also see people moving up rather quickly because we've given them the opportunity. And, you know, when you talk about elastic and inelastic, you know, that's kind of the challenge that we have, you know, because some of our revenues are elastic and some are very inelastic. Which is not a bad thing necessarily. For instance, property tax, ad valorem tax, even with a recession, we collect them. A recession doesn't relieve anybody from having to pay their obligation that way. So if we had sales tax right now and we're living off sales tax, that could be challenging. So we've positioned ourselves pretty well right now that regardless which way the economy goes, we should remain fairly stable.
Just one follow-up question. So can you just quick fly over on step increases? Look, when you talk about employees, especially law enforcement, you've got a step increase. And is the COLA on top of that step increase? And how do those two interact? And if we just decided, well, we're not going to raise millage, we're going to get rid of COLA, or we're going to do away with STEP, and what does all that look like?
Okay, I think this was about 5 years ago when we were having a lot of issues with staffing, retaining people, recruiting people, and a lot of complaints from the people that were here. We looked at a lot of different options, and the one that I call the big three of public safety, detention, sheriff's office, and EMS. We came up with the plan of a step plan, which is front loaded. And what I mean by that is you start off and each year you move a step, which it starts at 5% increase and then drops down to, I believe, 4%, 3%, 2%, 1%. And it's fairly quick that it starts dropping down. You also get the cost of living increase if there is one. And the whole reason for that, what we're finding is a lot of compaction. Whereas over the years, we couldn't do both. We couldn't give a cost of living plus a merit increase. We didn't want to do just a merit because it would have been small enough that we had to do something to keep the salaries moving. Keep in mind, we are in competition with private industry, competition with other public agencies. So we have to stay competitive. But what we were finding is a lot of our, especially in the public safety areas, we would start people at, say, $30,000 and then raise that starting salary. because we didn't want to keep getting behind and having that lag behind. So we were trying to keep everything moving, and we knew what it would do. We knew it would compact. However, we were able to keep the starting salaries moving so that we could keep recruiting. So what this step plan does, it'll reward you for years of service. So it differentiates those that started this year versus those that started last year and the year before, and just gives a little bit of separation, not a lot. And then as you, like I said, as it progresses up with 10, I believe 10 years is when it starts going away completely. And then you're just getting the cost of living increase. So it was very well received by public safety. I think we've seen it in the recruitment, probably the feedback that you all get. It still needs some tweaks at times because, you know, no system's perfect. But it was a very costly system to put in place.
Without that system, when you have eventually a basic patrolman will be making as much or more as a sergeant.
That's very
funny. That was
happening.
Low morale and less incentive to achieve more responsibility and rank.
Right. Why go for a promotion if you're not going to make any more money? And actually, you know, you make just as much doing what you're doing. We tried to differentiate that. And we had the salary survey done by the outside group, and they pointed out some things that way, how we can basically get off the compaction issue. But it seems to have helped based on the numbers. Of course, then COVID hit, so that messed everything up.
One thing that kind of always curious to me was Act 388. And the county, I don't believe, has ever used Act 388, maybe until now. But oftentimes we've seen a lot of fire service areas and other special purpose districts routinely invoke 388 for their cost of living and, you know, operations and sometimes even capital. You got any comments on that?
You're correct. We've never used it. That was Act 388 is what set up the property tax laws that we currently have that allows for basically your millage to be adjusted based on population gain and cost of living. If you have negative population gain or negative inflation, then it's zero. So you never have to go backwards, but in order to go forwards. And it also provides for a 3-year look back, the current year plus 3 years, if you did not take a millage adjustment during those 3 years. What you're seeing is a lot of the taxing jurisdictions in the county have looked at that, and have fire districts have come before county council and gotten that. School district does it quite rarely. I believe some of the municipalities have also done it. Of course, that doesn't come to county council, but they've done it. So it's was put in place knowing that, you know, you're going to have some inflation, you're going to have population gains. And as we've talked, you know, population growth doesn't always immediately translate into increased revenue. In fact, it could actually end up costing you immediately. If you think about it, all these people that moved to Greenville, are they building a new house? Probably not. They're not building, you know, they're moving into existing homes that have been here. So those are already on the tax rolls. They'd move into an apartment that perhaps had been occupied already. Over time, you see additional homes, additional apartments being built, things like that, but it's not always immediate. However, once they're here, the demand for service is pretty much immediate. You know, they need, you need deputies, you need for traffic accidents and other issues that you may have, EMS and things like that. So there are demands on public services immediately when people show up at the county.
Back to the new construction piece. I mean, depending on when and where you close on your new construction, it's a year before you're going to see any revenue, because most times when you close, you're paying taxes on the lot, not taxes on the house.
Till it rolls around. Yeah. So there's always that lag time for everything to get closed out and get switched over. That's correct.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to pay early, we're good with that. We never turn it down.
Joe, people who were moved out of that house, they had to move somewhere else, correct? They're not moving out of the county or the state necessarily.
Well, usually new people, it's a new estimate of population. It's people coming from outside.
I agree, but people who were living in the house they moved in,
yeah,
they got to go somewhere.
Well, they did.
Like my situation,
right.
I just bought a house. I built a house. I moved out of the house. Someone moved in. So the county, a net of that transaction, the county is going to already get my tax revenue from my old house. They're not going to get my new tax revenue for another year. So, you know, it depends. I mean, sometimes it'll come immediately. But, I mean, that's just a little micro level. But if you look at all the houses that are being built in Greenville County, it's clear it's, you know, it's a it translate to a much bigger number tax revenue that the county's having to wait for. Just
keep in mind, 4% property too doesn't really pay for the public services that it demands. The commercial properties fund a lot of the public services.
For the the 6%.
Yep. There's been many studies. In fact, Mark Ferris with GADC will talk at great length about that, where they've shown where, you know, a subdivision itself, yeah, it does increase some revenue, but the demand for service is much higher than, say, you build an office building or something like that. The demand for service is just much lower.
I believe we're on the topic of general fund. That accounts for what, about 60% of our budget?
Yeah.
General fund,
yeah,
roughly. About $250 million versus a budget of under $400 million.
That's about right.
$380 something. Any more questions about the general fund at this time?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Rick?
Okay, Joe, this for me. When we raise millage, 6%, they will get a raise. Most, I would assume, 6% is rental. Rental home when it's residential.
It should be, yeah.
Okay. The folks that usually rent, in my experience, are bad credit, no jobs, or a little job, So this, I'll put it personally. I got 10 rentals. I've worked all my life. That's my investment. That's why I invest my retirement. When the taxes go up, and the people who rent my homes are not very successful people. They're hardworking. I barely make the rent. My rent's low. But when I get the 6 millage increase, guess what? I'm in it to make a dollar. I'm going to have to increase my rent. So if I'm doing it, I would think the big boys are going to do it. So aren't we? That's my biggest issue I have with raising millage. It's the 6% that I'm paying now. I'm going to raise my rent. So the people who are the lower income are going to be picking up the bill.
Yeah. There again, I think it's tough to basically generalize that it's lower income, because there's apartments right across the way here. They're $3,300 a month, so that's not lower income. That's
6%, I agree.
And there's a lot of those across the county, so it reaches all across the county. But 6%. But keep in mind, it's based on the value. So if your home is the rental home, depending on the value of it, it's all in relations. It's just a relation between the value in the millage. Chances are it won't be, it's, you know, when you look at this table that shows the different home value, median home price in Greenville is $350,000 now. We're talking $154 is what it would take.
At 6%?
At 4%, that's 4% residential. But there's all kinds of other things that go into it too. You're paying more taxes anyway on 6% because you don't get the operating credit from the sales tax for schools. All residential do, 4% properties do. So there's a lot of different things. The percentage of increase actually will be smaller probably than what it would be on this.
Just trying to get a start. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Steve Shaw, if anybody's watching on TV. I just want to get the numbers here correct. If we would increase the current millage up to 59.8 mils, that's an addition of 11 mils per year. My math says that's a 22.5% increase in millage. Do I have that part correct?
I don't know that I looked at the percentage, but I think that's close. Yeah, 22.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cornell. So just to be clear, that means a Greenville County taxpayer will pay 22.5% more in taxes on their cars, homes, and any other taxable property.
On the county's portion of the tax bill. Keep in mind, we issued the bill for the entire tax bill. So it's just, which is basically 20%, 22% increase of roughly 18% of the total bill. So if you look at it that way, you'll have about a 4% increase on your property tax bill.
Understood. And that's a fair clarification. But the portion that us 12 people have responsibility for, we're increasing it 22.5%. And the same for businesses. So if we increase that, we're increasing on the businesses taxable. Okay. And that's all for now.
Okay. Anybody else on the general fund? We can talk about special revenue funds, revenues by source and expenditures. And let's see if Mr. Cornell would like to comment on that. Which is the other part of our general fund, special revenue funds. And all this is in the budget provided to the council members.
Yeah, I did want to, special revenue funds, as you know, are to be used to account for those items, those budget items that are required by law to be separated, that cannot be just put into the general fund. We try to keep as much in the general fund that we can. However, certain laws or sources of the revenues require to be accounted for in special revenue funds. It's a standalone entity, so to speak, the fund is. However, there are transfers that occur through all the governmental funds that are allowed by law. For instance, hospitality tax, we use part of that for recreation. And so we transfer to recreation fund, which is in the special revenue funds. There was a, somebody sent me, one of you all sent me something about an email that you'd received from somebody saying that all the numbers are different from what I presented to the actual, what we handed out and now the budget ordinance. Yeah, they are. They're different. And there's a reason for it. And, you know, we've talked about this over the years. When the presentation I made basically is all the funds, when I say all the funds, all the dollars that are expended by the county. But keep in mind, for instance, we have our general fund. We have our special revenue fund. We have our internal service fund. That's the key one. That's where we have health insurance and dental insurance and all that runs through there. It's about a $30 million operation, okay? We are charging ourselves, each department over in general fund and any of the special revenue funds, and the money's flowing there. So if I present that to you as here we have, you know, $300 million over here, which includes that expenditure, and then you got $330 million over here, are we not double counting it? Yes, we are. So that's why we strip out all the double counting and everything. We also have to keep in mind that we do use some fund balance on occasion. So in order to balance the budget in the ordinance and everything, we have all that in there so that it's balanced, that budget is balanced. But it's kind of like personally, you have your budget and this month you end up spending $500 more than your income. So you take it out of savings account. Okay. So we show the expenditure, but when we're laying out the budget, it's understood that it's not new revenue. It's understood that it comes from somewhere. But at the end of the day, when we show you a budget and the budget ordinance, it has to be balanced. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we're not like the federal government, so we can't print money. So we can't do a deficit budget. You know, it's not possible. So I just want to make that very clear, because unless you sit down and deal with the numbers all day long, and that's why we keep Ruth around and John and everybody, just to ensure all these numbers. We try to make it as vivid and as clear for council that we possibly can. But then when you start breaking it down and looking at it, it gets a little bit more difficult to follow sometimes.
Mr. Chairman. Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Harrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Canal, just a quick question. What is the, I just haven't run this math yet. What is the projected dollar amount of the 11 mils increase? Instead of talking in mils and percentages, do you have that number? I know it's a projection.
$32,731, $731,270.
Thank you.
For general fund, it's 22 million.
General fund's 22. Thank you.
That's a good question. Mr. Jubilex.
Mr. Chairman, I'm gonna have some road questions. So I didn't know where you wanted to put that. I just wanted to make sure I don't get.
Okay, I appreciate that. I think we can take those now if you like.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cornell, I know there's a lot. We've got a lot of good things in our budget, and we've got a lot of good causes, a lot of good everything. So let me just go down. I've got a list of questions. Let me ask you a few of them, if you don't mind. I'm looking on page 124 specifically, the road program. There's where I'm kind of looking at. So if y'all want to follow along, but yeah, so it looks like you're on the revenue for the roads fee charge on autos will be will generate each year. Is that 15 million? Is that correct? $15,250,000, is that right? Or
no, ropies, I'm showing the first year would be $11,800,000. The second year I'm showing $12,337,000. Now we are getting additional revenue from C funds. We're estimating $2.3 million each of the next 2 years, plus interest earnings of $70,000 each of the next 2 years. So it brings total revenues for the first year of $14,170,000.
Are you looking on page 124?
Yeah, these are expenditures that you're looking at on page 124. If you want to go back a couple pages to page 117, you can. No, we don't have revenue in there. It's where? In the ordinance. Yeah, that's expenditure side. That's the expenditures that you're seeing there.
Okay.
11 million plus
the 4.9. Well, let me ask you this then. All right. So you're saying, how much are you saying on the general? How much are you saying with the road fee charge and all on autos would generate how much each year?
$11,800,000 the first year.
Okay.
And $12,337,000 the second year.
Okay.
Those are projections.
Projections.
Right. Yes, okay. And then, all right. So then, is the $2 million on road that says It appears as $2 million of road fee money is being transferred to the general fund to support Public Works Department. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Make sure I had that. All right. Then it says, my question is, are the expenses being subsidized in the public works other than staffing cost? Any of the $2 million going directly into road paving? Can you provide details as to what or when exactly is being funded in public works and how it relates to road paving? And I'm just sticking to road paving here because I'm, you know.
That's fine. That pays salaries for the crews. You know, where that. Do we add other money to that, though? We do. Yeah. It pays for a portion of it. Doesn't pay for it all.
Portion. Mm-hmm. All right. And then you've got $2.2 million of the road fee money has been transferred to pay bonds issued for road maintenance. Is that debt payment required for the $30 million we just issued, or is that other debt?
It's the $30
million. That we just issued?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Got a couple more. Thank you for allowing me to ask. There's $750,000 in road fee money is being used to fund equipment replacement. Is that a list? I mean, what is that? More?
Yeah, it's for equipment in that department.
All right. On page 11 in the road program description, the budget notes there's $700 being provided to other local governments from the county. Is that part of the $11 million being listed in this section of the budget?
Yes, sir. That goes for municipal paving projects.
Okay. All right. So this is what I got. Although these are great programs, but here's a question I have. Is it correct that the budget in year one spends almost $9.5 million on affordable housing, green spaces, and public transit, which, as it does in on roads, which you've got 10, I got 10.3 here. So are those three green space, public transit, and affordable housing, it adds up to $9.5 million. Is that correct? Does somebody can confirm that I'm looking at that correctly?
Nine and a half. What's the 4.5?
Nine and a half. Is that
right? Yeah. Well, the 4.5 that you're adding in there, actually 2.5, that's a contingency in number for the Conestee Dam replacement. Depending on what happens with the state funding, they had requested local funding. We don't know where that's going to come. So it's a contingency. It may get spent. It may not, all depending on the state.
Okay. So
you'd have $3 million plus $2 million, $2 million for the land trust. And then you'd have... $2 million for affordable housing.
So that was $9 million. $7 million.
Yeah.
Is what I just
right. It'd come up to $7 million if you take that 2.5 out that isn't part of what you had described.
Okay. Well, I said $9.5 million, so it's actually $7 million. Okay. All right. So is it correct that all road paving is being funded by the vehicle road fee and that none of the property tax increase is being used for the road paving? Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. I'm read it right. All right. I just want to make sure I've got it right. So we've got 22.5%, what he just said. I guess that's correct. And none of that's being used for road paving.
That's correct.
Okay. That's all I got. Thank you for answering those. Appreciate that. Thank you.
On the road program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Part of the funds coming out of the road maintenance fee pays for paving that Public Works does internally. And the other part pays for what we contract out to other contractors. Is that correct?
Right. The road maintenance fee pays for all of the maintenance and
internal or contract.
Yeah, because when we get match funds from the C funds, which we do, we'll get, I believe we got $2.3 million budgeted for that. they actually manage that program. So then we contract with them to do the paving. So we pretty much contract all the paving out with the C funds.
Okay, we're still talking about special revenue funds. And I appreciate those questions, Mr. Chivilakis. Any other special revenue funds you want to comment on? Or any council members have a question about?
I have one. Isn't it about $1 million a mile to pave now? What pricing?
It's about $450,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But we can get about 20 miles.
Yeah, it went from 270,000 last year to like 450 this year. Hopefully we see some stabilization. That's just not inflation. Part of that's due to the workload. Because of all the building going on, there's all kinds of work being done. So we're just one of a number in line to get it done.
We update the OCI every 2 or 3 years.
Something like that. I think Heisha's back here. 4 years.
Every 4 years. Is this the year that gets done? Or this is the year. Okay. And, of course, what OCI is, overall condition index, 0 to 100. And they look at, I think, every road in the county and determine what kind of condition it's in, what kind of life it has left. Our policy is a paving the worst first.
Sure.
But every district does get some road paving.
Yeah, we spread it across all districts, but it is worst first. So we're not paving one with a 70 and then not paving something with a 40. Just depending on where you are.
Okay, Joy. Yes, sir.
I had a few questions on the special revenue fund medical charities.
Yes, sir.
Just wanted to get a little elaboration on that.
Yes, sir. And you have specific questions or just you want
just, to I would like a little minute? More, a little bit more information on it. Okay. We didn't really dive into that one too much.
Do we get this here? That pretty much is used for the medical care for our visitors at our detention center.
Okay.
You know, that's become a very expensive proposition. It's about a $10 million annual cost just because of the population that we have at our detention center and the healthcare costs. You know, we utilize nurse practitioners in-house. We have a number on staff. We've had to add a number of them this past couple of years just because we're short. We have regular nurses, and then we contract with bring in doctors from the healthcare providers. So it's a full-fledged medical operation that we have there.
Yeah.
We do have to send money to the state. Do you know how much that is off the top of your head? It's a couple $1 million, and it's about $2 million goes to the state. And they use that also to pay for indigent care in the detention facilities or prison system across the state. We've been hammered over there. And a big percentage of our visitors over there, we're not only dealing with strictly medical conditions, but we're also dealing with mental health conditions. And so we have a number of people that work on the psychiatric side also. We actually contract with a psychiatrist that comes in and evaluates and treats and issues drugs or whatever that it need be. But it's a big part of our facility over there.
Joe was talking about that.
Oh, thank you. That answers my question. I was just, I don't think the medical charities is kind of clear for where that goes. So I'm just, thanks for that clarification.
Hey, sir. Benton, Mr. Blunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a pretty broad question, so I don't know where it really fits in either, but it's got a follow-up to it. But I know, and I kind of understand, but just so I can really get a good grip on this, with the proposed millage increase I know that we said we haven't made the adjustment in 28 years, almost 30 years. And when I'm talking to people in my district about it, and I've tried to do that as much as possible, I tell them that the county used their magic to make it work where we didn't have to increase it, but now I'm being asked what that magic was. So if there's any kind of explanation you could give me as to the magic that allowed us to do that for so long.
Yeah, we ran out of the fairy dust. Actually, it's over the years, it's been a variety of different techniques that we've put in place. We started years ago with the focusing on a number of the funds and whatnot, for instance, health insurance fund. I think I spoke to that at the retreat or something where we made some adjustments and some changes to the way that whole thing worked and everything, and saved a ton of money for the county. It was in the red when we started, and then all of a sudden we had a very strong fund balance. So it did not become a drain, and we didn't have to increase the rates we charged ourselves for a number of years. Detention center, when we started, they had set aside $25 million for the expansion of the detention center. It was going to require, I believe, 90 additional personnel to operate. So they had laid off, or not laid off, but not filled about 35 positions. And then me as the new administrator was requested to lay off 35 people, filled positions, which I don't know about y'all, but coming into a new job and basically cutting your workforce back is not a great way to start. So we challenged them, and we came back with basically building the addition to the detention center, same number of beds, required 35 people to staff it, and did it for half the price. So what that did, it freed up about $12 million for the next 15, 18 years that we used for all the capital projects at the detention center. When we put in the juvenile center, how did we do that? Well, we had money set aside from way back when. So, you know, we got creative that way. We've made a couple of land transactions over the years that have created some funds for the county. The Matrix, where we were able to purchase that for about $3 million, turn around and sold 60% for $4 million, and had withheld two lots for $1 million apiece. So we got $6 million back on a $3 million investment. And that was in a very short period of time, like I'm talking months. And then we just now sold another lot, got another million. So we got $7 million back on a $3 million investment. It's been a combination of those things. Nothing real specific. We did challenge all the departments to cut back wherever you could, so there's no waste throughout. Look at your staffing. For instance, recreation, we outsource some of the activities there. So just try to manage it more efficiently and effectively over the years, and we did it. We did have some problems though with salaries that got a little bit stagnant that we had to play catch up on. So that's why we got hit the last few years. Everybody saw what happened when the pandemic came, that people stayed home and then didn't go back to work. So now all of a sudden there's a huge competition for workers and all that. Well, that drove prices up. My goodness, the nursing staff at the detention center, they could go somewhere else and make twice as much across the street. So, our magic wand kind of ran its course. But throughout the years also, we kept building our fund balance, from 20 million to 25 to 30. We actually operated in a surplus a number of years, and we stuck that aside. We didn't just spend it so that it would carry forward for a number of years. And that's what kept us from having to do something sooner.
Thank you. I guess the follow-up question to that is, and this is something I haven't been able to answer, but what is the significant difference between this particular budget cycle and all those other 28 years to where we couldn't somehow muster up that same kind of magic without such a drastic millage increase and then tier that over the course of several cycles until we catch up with where we should be?
Well, I think the big thing is inflation has played a big key to that. Last 2 years worth of inflation, that it's really amplified it. The salary situation of the employees has amplified it. I just think we'll be putting ourselves at risk if we hold off.
Mr. Cornell.
I mean, that's totally up to
That brings to mind the expense for the public safety telecommunications system.
Right.
Is there a special revenue fund for that?
There is now. As you know, we had it in place, and it got thrown out. We still have the expenses, but have zero revenue. We've had a number of those things occur also, to your point about why now. And that's going to get worse and worse as we move forward, because we've been told that our radios need to be upgraded to the tune of about $13 million in the next 2 to 4 to 3 years. I'm hoping it goes longer. We're at the mercy of the provider, of course. And we will finance that at the time, but we need to have some revenue to pay for it. You know, we can't just keep absorbing it if we don't have the revenue for it. But you're correct, about $13 million on the horizon.
And while we're talking about revenue, when you compare, you can't compare us to the federal government. We've talked about that. But municipal governments get a lot of revenue from business license fees. We have none of that in the county, right?
We have a business registration that, you know, it's very expensive. It costs you $0 a year. But we have to maintain that. We have to keep that database up to speed and, you know, go out there. So we've had to add staff to that. We've had a number of those things happen over the years that have additional responsibilities, but no funding for it. And that's the challenge that we have. We just got to, you know, figure out how we can pay for these things.
Chairman Tripp.
Yeah, I was going to tag on to what you were asking about how we've been able to do it. And I think you had an anecdote the other day when you came in, where you changed the culture of your department heads. And rather than spend down their budget every year, you told them, I mean, why don't you tell the story? You can tell it better than I.
Yeah, we, you know, John Hansley and myself, we come from the finance side, you know, both MBAs, finance and accounting and all this good stuff. So we know numbers pretty well. And we study them. We have dashboards and all that. So we see what's going on. And, you know, it looks like a whole lot of numbers. So when you start looking at trends and comparing what they did last year and the year before, we started by 1 year not telling people when we're stopping the accounts payable. So if you didn't have your information in the system, your POs, based purchase orders, we cut it off without telling them. And that was a number of years ago, which it caused a lot of concern, let's put it that way. Well, what we were suspecting was happening was people were saving their money up in their budget, get toward the end of the year, and then hurry up and go out and buy some stuff. My point is, if you have to wait until June, the last fiscal or month of the fiscal year, to spend it, you probably don't need it, you know. So that was an eye opener for all departments, and so we had several meetings and explained to them that, you know, you don't get penalized here if you don't spend your budget. People had the mindset that if you don't spend it, you lose it. I don't operate that way. Tell me what you need. I'll do my best to get it for you. But there's going to be times when you don't know what you need and something comes up and you're going to need more money. And I'll work like crazy to find that for you. So that's how it's worked over the years, many, many years now, where the departments are happy to turn money in at the end of the year. It's not a black mark on them, which, you know, that's not the culture in a lot of government type operations, quite frankly. They think if they don't spend it, they're going to lose it next year. I don't operate that way. You tell me what you need. We'll do what we can to get you what you need if it's reasonable. But please don't try to spend it down, because you never know. We're watching. And but even the sheriff, you know, the elected office, not even the sheriff, the elected offices subscribe to it. And they're very proud to report, hey, I'm turning in this amount, and it all goes to fund balance, so we can just keep it rolling for the next time and go from there.
I'm looking now at internal service funds and fleet management, and that made me recall one thing the sheriff said back at our retreat. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think he said to get a deputy, a new person, signed up, trained, equipped, and in a car and out on the road is $180,000 up front. Is that the number y'all? I'm pretty sure that's the number he said. Now, I can't remember exactly how many new deputies you're going to add this coming year, or how many he wants.
Well, we can tell you what that
is. But you can look, while you're looking that up, we're talking about fleet management. And a big portion of our expenses is in our vehicles used by law enforcement, EMS, county staff, codes enforcement, and so on and so forth. So any details about how we pay for that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, we normally do a lease purchase for those. Go out state bid, buy a lot of them off state bid. When we can get them off state bid, that's been a challenge the last few years, where they've had a scramble and just get them wherever they can. Dealers haven't had stock inventory. Some of the bigger stuff we can order, although timing wise it takes a while. We've had, I believe, 14 ambulances on order now for about a year. So it's just a matter of when the vehicles are available. We've had one instance where we had 30 patrol vehicles on order for about 9 months, and they got notification that that order was being canceled, and turn around and they increased prices. We could reorder at the increased price, which we had to do because they're the only game in town. So we're running into a lot of challenges there, finding trucks, pickup trucks, other types of equipment has been a real challenge. Just the wait times and the pricing, as I indicated during my presentation, the Dodge Challenger has gone up from 25,000 to 38,000 for the base vehicle, and then we have to equip them with the lights and sirens and all that. So basically it's cut into the number of vehicles we can buy. Instead of buying four, we're able to buy three and multiply that by many, many times. So we got about $7 million set aside for vehicles and equipment. It's not all from the general fund. It's not all from any one fund. It's spread across the whole budget. When I say a lease, it's really not a lease. It's just what they call the financials tool that we use. We own the vehicles. We pay them over 3 years or 7 years or 6 years, three to six, depending on the type. And if a vehicle gets wrecked and we have to get a new one, then that comes out, a new one goes in, takes its place, and things like that. So it's a way we can keep the fleet, try to get it up to speed. We don't have any $3 million cranes in this budget. We've had those in the past. Never did find a used one. So we're not putting another one in right now. Also we get the fuel through there. For any county vehicle, we have fueling stations across the county. We don't pay the taxes that everybody else has to pay normally. And we buy it at a discount. Of course, that discount still is expensive. When the gas price goes up, it's a few cents off what everybody else is paying. But
you pay the road maintenance fee?
Yeah. We actually had a situation, talking about how we do it. Over the years, that brings up another item when back a few years when natural gas, compressed natural gas became an option. We actually started fueling our patrol vehicles with natural gas. We put a tank in there, and then, and I don't know, did you have one? Mm-hmm. You could actually grill at the same time you're driving, I think, but
the car smelled a little funky.
Yeah, it actually was propane. It wasn't natural gas, it was propane. And we were able to do a structure, a program with that, that all the equipment was pretty much given to us by a grant. Then it turned out we got all the fuel state bid with a rebate. We were actually doing that. It was costing us zero to operate that on the propane for quite a period of time. So, you know, just creativeness like that. A lot of those programs have dried up, though, over the years, and we're kind of stuck with what we got.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
I'm getting a lot of texts that we're not streaming. Is that by design, or is why are we not having this meeting streamed so the citizens of Greenville County can see it? Is there a particular reason it's not?
Just it's a workshop, and we don't normally. If that's something council would like to do, we can start doing it.
And I just got a lot of text, so it was a question.
I don't think we can fly, but I told Joey that next workshop we would do it. I didn't realize we weren't streaming.
Yeah, we just never have, Stan. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. I gotten a lot of text. I wanted to ask the question.
Okay.
A follow up on that, Mr. Administrator. Has Sheriff Lewis said public safety will marketably suffer without new deputies? And does he know that can only be done with a tax increase?
I don't know if he's. I'm just presenting what we had talked about during our budget discussions that we've had a number of meetings on the budget. And he indicated, you know, based on what he's seeing, that this is the minimum he can get by with. So
you could propose that and see what he does real quick.
I wasn't there for the what was that called? A retreat when he
and I think that is one of the questions that were on that email.
Yeah, it is.
Came out, so maybe
yeah, I mean, they'll have to
came out one of those questions.
Yeah, they'll have to talk to the sheriff. That's yeah.
On the continuing with the internal service funds, of course, you mentioned a little bit about a health and dental plan, and you might want to comment on workers' compensation. If we have a safe work environment, hopefully we don't have many claims on that, but we do have to pay insurance for it. And I don't know how big an expense that is, really, off the top of my head. Any comments on that? I know health has been a big item over the years, and as we have an aging workforce, it seems to be growing as we're self-employed, self-insured.
Yeah, the health insurance fund has been a challenge, especially the last few years, because we have gotten hit hard. Everybody, I believe, experienced the same thing. With COVID, pretty much there's no co-pays for a lot of things. Everything was COVID-related. Which kind of hurt us. We're hoping, and we're monitoring this very closely, to start to trend downward. That's the plan. That's the hope. We're also dealing with rising pharmaceutical prices, healthcare prices across the board. You know, it's kind of a catch-22. We're using it less, however. The price when we do use it is higher. So we're monitoring all that. We continue to work. We have a third party consultant that we deal with that reviews a lot of the things that we have in our plan and looks for ways to lower cost, outsourcing, whether it's a different drug plan than we currently have. So we're always looking for that, and we'll continue to do that. Workers' comp, we actually do pretty well with that. We charge all the departments based on the type of employee they have. For instance, somebody that works at the landfills we're charging a little bit higher rate than somebody that works in county square office. You know, obviously it's all based on the type of job you do. Sheriff's deputy, of course, is a higher risk than somebody that works in the office. So we adjust accordingly and charge ourselves that way. And then if we have a good year, like we've had many good years, instead of adjusting those rates down, we transfer it back to general fund. So it it has worked fairly well, and you know, to keep the cost down. Anything that we can do that way, we try to do. We are looking at potential, as you talked about, the aging workforce. I've heard a number of comments from different employee groups across the county that because of the higher costs of retiree health benefits, that they're just sticking around here until they're either Medicare eligible or some other reason. They just can't afford the healthcare to stay on our plan. And we do have a good plan. So I've asked our people to take a look at what we think it'll look like financially if we were to lower the retirees' rates closer to the current employee rates. I'm somewhat convinced with doing some more analysis that what we'll see is we'll see a outward flow of some long-tenured employees that are higher paid, and that hopefully we'll be able to backfill with younger employees that'll be a little bit lower paid, of course, they've been here 30, 40 years, without a huge impact on the health plan. That's what we're trying to balance here. So to your point about our workforce aging, that should tell you something about the organization. We have a lot of older people working here. I can say that now. I guess I'm one of them. You know, so we're able to retain a lot of our employees for years and years and years, which is a good thing, except for when they get up in the upper ages, then it becomes more costly. So we need to figure out how to balance that, and that's what we're looking at. And hopefully, not too distant future, within this summer, hopefully we can report back on some of that.
Yes, sir. Ben Blunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the health care was actually a question that I had when I was trying to digest the numbers. I'm not going to pretend to understand everything, but am I correct in thinking that in both 22 and 23, we almost saw like a $7 million or above what we projected for insurance? Is that right?
I think so. Let me, yeah.
And is that, yeah. And we're one of the only, are we one of the only counties that don't basically outsource our health insurance? We're one of the main ones that do.
I don't know, but I'd be very surprised.
Right. I didn't know if we were. I didn't know if there was a point that if it continued to get too high, if we would need to look at.
Well, and that's that. What we'll do. We will price it. The challenge you have, you know, the components of health insurance, just to make it very simple, is you have your claims. That's one aspect of the cost. You have your administration. And then you have your profit, taxes, and all that stuff. So when you self-insure, what you try to do, of course, is pay the claims. Your administration, hopefully, will be less than what you would be paying an insurance company. But then you keep the profit. You keep the taxes. You keep all that stuff. We don't have to pay a tax on our operations. Usually you have a couple good years and a bad year, a couple good years and a bad year. That's been the trend. Unfortunately, as of late, there's been successive about 5 years of bad years. Mm-hmm. And that's claims going up, additional claims for whatever reason. It could be the aging workforce. It could be a lot of different things. And the severity of claims. We've been hit with all that over the last 5 years. There again, with the pandemic thrown in there, it's real hard to gauge what's what. And we'll have it figured out here. So we would report that to a private insurer, and then they would, you know, actuarially take a look at our numbers and project out. And then give us a rate, but they'd have to have the administration costs in there, the profit, all the other stuff. So we do, when I say we self-insure, we do have some protections in place with the plan. For instance, we have your specific stop loss in place and your aggregate stop loss in place. Your aggregate stop loss is for the whole plan. In other words, we got a $30 million plan. If it goes above 125% of that, for instance, then this kicks in. And then you don't have to pay after that. We also have specific, which is based on individual claims. So any one of us has a claim. I believe right now that number may be 350,000. So any claim that we have for an individual, once it exceeds $350,000, then this kicks in, the specific insurance, and then it covers and picks it up from there. So we have a lot of different things at work here. But there again, the cost, you know, the drug cost, when those things go through the roof, and it's a balancing act, because if we cut back on some of these things, then somebody's going to be paying for it. So it's going to be put on the employee. And so that's what we've done really well over the years, I believe, balancing that out. We've been able to give a 2% pay increase or 2.5% pay increase, but we haven't hit them over here, where they're actually taking home less money than tomorrow than what they were today. So, you know, it's trying to balance all those.
Let's talk about solid waste and stormwater management proprietary funds. I know we hear a lot about the landfill solid waste. It's an expense item. Although it's a proprietary fund, it doesn't make any money for us.
Can we just up and sell the landfill? Does that solve our problems?
It would solve landfill problems. I mean, if you look at the fund itself, it, you know, it takes about $6.8 million to operate of property tax is what goes toward that. That's not necessarily just for the landfill proper. Keep in mind, we operate a number of convenience centers across the county that people go to all the time. Most people don't go to the landfill. Not that they don't want to go down and see Rick. They just don't want to drive that far. So they go to the convenience center close to your home or whatever. We take a lot of trash in all those areas, and we don't charge for it. So that's a huge expense, both collection and then disposal. That's what I suggest that the property tax is going for, is for the convenience center, so to speak. We do have the operation of the landfill. That's an option to either sell it or come up with some either private or even another public agency to look at operating it. Rates probably need to be adjusted, but I think we also need to take a look at the mix of waste that we're accepting. We've had some pushback over the years. First we didn't, then we did. Taking waste from outside the county. And I'm not saying from New York or out of state or something like that, but I'm saying outside the county. Currently, there's X amount of waste generated within the county. Of that, we're only keeping a fairly small percentage in the county that's coming to our landfill. The rest of it is actually going to other landfills in the state or perhaps outside the state. We do take Pickens County trash. We contract with them. We talked about taking Lawrence County. We had been taking some from North Carolina, which actually that one worked out pretty well. It was auto fluff, we called it. It was the remnants from when they would demolish a car, the interior seats and all the stuffings and stuff, which worked pretty well because they'd pay us a tipping fee. But then we'd use it for the cover to cover up the trash, which was kind of nice. So we have to, I think, take a hard look at what makes sense. Do we you know, expand our business. We have quite a bit of life left. I'm saying somewhere around 75 years probably, which, you know, I think that may be a little bit longer than we need it to be. So that's something I think we ought to take a real hard look at.
Sure, Jim.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks, Jim. Mr. Cannell, the specifically on the proprietary funds, I'm just looking at the expenses. I don't think I have the revenues in front of me. What is the rough delta that we're, you know, because these are technically funds that can make money or can profit. What's the delta we're losing roughly on combined, the stormwater and the?
Stormwater, we don't lose any money.
Okay. How about for?
That's totally funds itself. That funds a lot of things.
Okay.
Anything with water quality, water quantity. For instance, it's getting ready in this budget. We do have some software that will benefit the stormwater program tremendously, but it'll also help our appraisers and everybody else. It's actually been very good.
Perfect. How about for solid waste?
Solid waste, you know, we can get you a breakdown of what just the operation of a landfill is, and I can give you a much better picture because we'd break out the convenience centers.
Okay.
And I don't show that in this budget, but I can get you that number. And that's kind of number I think we need because we are providing a free service
right.
to our citizens. And if it's something that we want to quit giving it to them free, which I'm not suggesting that that's something we do, but if it's something that we need to look at, then we'll have the true numbers.
I agree. And I think this is just the page I'm on. I'm looking at the, you know, 8.1 of expense. Well, that doesn't really matter. If you're bringing in 9 million, that'd be great. But if you're bringing in two, then, right. you know, it's a big difference.
It's subsidized by, like I said, by 6.8 million worth of property tax.
Right. But I'm saying the revenue, the delta between the revenue and the expense on them. So thank you. Yeah. I'd love to see that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Understand.
Thank you. Yeah. Following up to that, we got to figure out, in my thinking, the sanitation needs to at least balance, you know, I mean, I don't know that it, you know, hopefully there's not a delta. We need to figure out a way to make that not, we need to figure out how to not have to fund it more.
Right, right.
I don't know what the solution is, but that we need to, we ought to figure that out as a group collectively. Another thing I want to say is, you know, we've talked about it a lot and we've talked about permits. We've talked about impact fees. You know, I think we got to get creative as a group on figure out how to look at some impact fees or something like that, or permit fees as all this building goes, you know, and also some ways to allow builders to have accelerated permanent periods and charge them a lot more to have that done. And we've talked about that before. All of us one time or another have said it. We need to figure out how to do some things like that and be creative, in my opinion, versus 22.5%. But we'll figure that out in the next few meetings, hopefully. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Dan.
While we on landfill, may I ask a question?
Say again?
While we on the landfill, can I ask a few questions?
Don't you have to recuse yourself?
I have to smell it, so I should have.
We don't charge for that. We don't charge extra for that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, a couple of items that I hear about the landfill is we don't generate any money for the county for the methane gas that's going to Greenwood, nor do we generate any revenue for the mulching company that's in there. And I understand there's a couple other companies that make a living out there that the county doesn't get any revenue. Is that a...
Actually, I'd call on who should... Come on up here.
I'm sorry.
We do get money for the gas. We get paid for that.
He's right.
This little button, mash it.
That one doesn't light up. That doesn't light up.
We do get money for the gas, and we are getting revenue for the other companies. We can get those numbers for you.
But we are generating income for the county.
Yes.
And keep in mind, some of those, like the mulch grinder and stuff, it takes care of what we would have to take care of otherwise. So, you know, we'd have to put more people on it to grind it up or do whatever. They're doing it for us. So we try to look for partnerships like that in some of these operations also.
even on the methane gas? Is it
methane gas? That one we have a contract. They pay us.
We should generate money for that.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, for both of them, because we got two of them. We got one at the Ennery landfill also.
Okay, we're getting close to the end of time for this session here, but before we go, we got capital projects, and you want to describe any of those or noteworthy to mention at this point?
Let me get my cheat sheet here. Yeah. Actually, we do have a number of things in there. Keep in mind, like the road improvements, $11 million we talked about, that's included in there. All the vehicles and equipment replacements, $7 million, that's included in there and included in the other funds to some degree also. So that, just so you know what's where, where is my, here's my list. So here we go. Thank you. All right. Information technology, that's always a big one. We spend approximately $2 million a year every year. A lot of that is contracts that we have out there, data services, storage, off-site storage, on-site storage, and things like that. Register of Deeds, they're having to preserve a lot of their old records that are starting to fade and where they're getting to be almost ill. You can't read them. But the contract with this company that basically restores them and brings it back so you can read them. A lot of these old deeds and documents are handwritten from centuries ago, just over time. So that's some funds put in there for that. We do have a number of items over at the detention center, boilers and waterproofing, fire alarm systems, things like that, health safety issues. Over at the detention center. These are just basically upkeep items. We do have a new target system for the sheriff's training facility, which, we just spent about $3 million on a training facility for them. And this kind of completes that whole project. We had told them originally we couldn't do it all at one time. We do have some money, $100,000 in for water line extensions. So that program that we've had, $100,000 per year, where we match up to 50% of the cost of the waterline expansion. Let's see what else, the big public works equipment, for Heshian Company. We do have some, about $500,000 for EMS, which includes software to improve the response times. We also have cardiac monitor replacements in there. You know, all our equipment we buy, whether it be a vest, a bulletproof vest, and things like that, there's a life to them. And once you get toward the end of that life, especially cardiac monitors and other medical type equipment, once you get to the end of that life, you can't rely on them. You expose yourself to liability, of course. So we have to look to replace those. And that's what we're doing with some of these cardiac monitors. We do it over a number of years. We don't try to do it all in one year. Parks and Rec has a number of projects within their budget. You know, that fund has done very well with basically going to pay-go, where we pay for things as we go, so that we're not having to issue debt. And then Stormwater has a few things in it for drainage projects. And then some of the monitoring for the water quality. And of course, we're always working on the quantity also. But that kind of sums up the capital projects.
Mr. Can I one more comment?
Quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, Mr. Cornell, one thing we can think about is to raise some money is we've got that retention. I mean, we've got the jail over there that has 16 acres. Now, I know we got to do something with the deputies, but it's got 16 acres. If you got $3 million an acre for it like you did here, or you could get $4 million an acre for that, that's almost $50 million you can generate. Put our deputies somewhere else for less money, and net-net, you could come out pretty well potentially. I think we ought to be creative like that and figure out a way to get $50 million in for the, you know, maybe, I don't know if it's net-net 50, but it's certainly a good number to look at.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, we're running out of time for this session, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Close up.
Let's do it. Thank you all for coming today. Thanks for your good questions, and we'll continue. And next time we'll have this live stream.
And finance committee meeting, we're going to take a break. We'll start in about 5 minutes.
I thought you were going to say, I've got an idea, a county council car wash. I got an idea to raise funds, a county council car